Everything okay. I know about Supernatural, I learned from Sarah and her Facebook. Okay. That's all I know.
Oh, okay.
Right. That's fine. So I know actually quite a lot.
You probably know more than you want to, uh-huh. but not enough yeah. to actually
you know
really
all the
understand.
Important parts.
All yeah. the important bits. I know all the fandom issues.
Okay. The issue, Sarah's issues. And so this is the Wayward Podcast. I guess we can just jump right in with this. We have a guest this time. I'm Toshi.
I'm Sarah.
And our guest is...
I'm Kat.
Okay, and you are not a Japanese person.
No, I'm not. No, yeah. I'm actually from Scotland.
Oh, okay. How long have... Like, why are you in Japan? What are you doing here?
Oh, wow, that's such an original question.
Yes.
I've been here about seven years altogether. Mm-hmm. And I'm a translator, interpreter. I originally came here on study abroad. And I managed to avoid teaching English to children. I'm one of the few people who has never taught English to children in Tokyo.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I think my last guest, he specifically teaches for children. Mm-hmm. So, so you've been here for how long?
About 7 years altogether. Yeah.
Okay. And how have you been enjoying it?
There's ups and downs. I think a lot of people, the first 3 years are really just fun all the time, 100%, 24/7 fun. But then after about 3 years, little things start to weigh on you, you know, like you get little niggles about, it's like the same anywhere, but particularly in a place that's so different to any other English-speaking country as here.
It's that sort of the sparkly eyes period of the dating scene is over.
The honeymoon bit is over, and then you start, especially if you start working at a Japanese company, I think that really can kill some of your enthusiasm.
I worked
at Sony.
Can you mention this?
Yeah, well, I just did. Oh, well. Okay. The odds of someone at Sony listening to this are very slim, I think, but...
Don't say that. We have fans everywhere. We're a global podcast.
Actually, I checked, and our number one fan is What's-His-Face.
Oh, wait.
The CEO. I call him What's-His-Face. It's an inside joke.
Kaz Hirai. Oh, my God. He's so sexy. He's sexy.
He's the only CEO of Sony who's become a South Park character.
Yeah, that was a great episode. No, I actually worked really closely with Kaz Hirai. And,
really?
Because I was in the CEO office, so this is getting too detailed now. But so I got to see him, like, every day. And he is really tall, like, especially for a Japanese person. He's really tall. He's like 6'1 or something. And he's got, like, he's like a silver fox. He's got this gray hair and, like, really defined features, and just all the women just were crazy about him.
And does he love Princess Kenny?
He loves Princess Kenny. I asked.
Has he seen that?
I really wanted to ask him, but I never had the nerve. Even when we once went drinking, like the CEO office went out together, and there were only like 8 of us there because it's quite a small group, and he was sitting opposite me. It was like the greatest moment of my life, just about. And I really wanted to ask him. I had like 2 glasses of wine, and I was on the edge of asking him, but then I couldn't. I chickened out.
Yeah, I've told you this, but I work for Kotaku and I do a lot of writing. His name comes up a lot.
Yeah,
and so
meme, right? Like he
pretty much
he knows about that, and he thinks it's pretty funny.
Really?
He said he liked those. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. And but you are no longer working at Sony right now.
I'm no longer, so I can say all this.
Yeah. Which is kind of why like all this internal stuff can come out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I am sworn to secrecy, but all that stuff is under the bridge now anyway. But like, he really likes the Ridge Racer meme where he goes Ridge Racer. He really like that. Like, I think he played that to himself a few times. I no longer work at Sony. Now I'm freelance and I translate and interpret freelance.
Good.
Which is great because I get to sleep in until 10 in the morning sometimes.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Like working from home is,
blessing and a curse.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But where, I guess I shouldn't ask where you live, but I'll just ask this. How was the commute to Sony when you were working there?
Well, no, that's fine. I'll give you the general area. I live in Shinagawa, which is not a very fashionable or cool place to live.
Okay, so it's not that far.
No, I mean, I chose my apartment with the assumption that I would work at Sony for a good few years and I would be able to cycle to work, because I like to cycle everywhere. And, I quit Sony after like 8 months. So I got stuck with this apartment in like a really inconvenient part of the city, like down, for everybody who doesn't know, Shinagawa is down south of the Yamanote Loop. Mm-hmm. So it's not far out, but it's like no one would come there to hang out with you. So you have to go to them.
Yeah, okay.
It's, hey guys,
it's a convenient place to live, yeah. Except for socializing, sort of.
Pretty much, yeah. Like, as in, it's a kind of a dead zone on weekends. It's just all offices and big, ugly expressways. And the immigration office is in Shinagawa, however.
Right.
Which is super, super awesome and useful.
For the one time you go there, right. Every 3 years.
Every 3 years. I can cycle to the immigration office. Great.
Oh, yes. That's very useful once every...
Exactly.
Years.
When my visa's up.
Yeah. All right.
So you only worked at Sony for about 8 months.
Yeah.
Would you recommend that people work for a Japanese company?
I have very strong views on this matter, so I'll try and like tamp them down a little bit. Okay.
No, be strong.
I don't know.
My experience is a little bit colored by the fact that I didn't enjoy it. I mean, I think you have to have a certain type of personality to really get on in a Japanese company. And
what sort of personality would you say?
Well, you know, it's, you want to avoid stereotypes, but, you know, if you enjoy following rules and keeping your head down and working as a team constantly, like, as in, you, and there are people like this, you know, where, and it's not a bad thing. I mean, the world needs these people, but like, people who are more like about group meetings to decide something rather than going and deciding it on their own. And who prefer to work as a group rather than on their own, Japanese company might be right for you. If you enjoy having any kind of independence in your work, and I don't know, I mean, I'm sounding really negative, but like...
There are absolutely people like that.
Yeah.
Who they work better as a team. Mm. The whole like... The nail that sticks out gets hammered down. Mm. There are a lot of people that are fine with that, or that comfortable with that. Mm. And I would say, as an extrovert, my life is very difficult. I get in trouble a lot for what I say. Mm. I don't work for a Japanese company. I actually work for a British company.
No.
But, yeah.
I didn't actually know that. I thought it was American.
Well, you could have Googled it. I'm not saying the name of the company, but even in that setting, because most of the staff and the management and the leadership is Japanese in this office, they're a little bit of the whole, like, the nail that sticks out mentality. But the global part of the company that I work for is very into being yourself and coming up with ideas and innovating and stuff like that. So
individualism.
So they're always trying to balance it with Japanese culture, like traditional Japanese companies. Mm-hmm. My recommendation would be, if you're going to work for a corporation in Japan,
be a drone.
No. A corporation in Japan. Mm-hmm. Work for a non-Japanese company.
Oh, okay.
If you're like me and Kat and have opinions and want to be heard and want to manage and deal with your own stuff, a Japanese company will kind of make you miserable. I mean, there's no beating around the bush with that.
I think that's true. And also another point is that in Japanese they're called gaishike, which are like, you know, foreign companies that operate in Japan, and those companies also generally pay better, they have better holidays, they have better working conditions, because the management and most of the top execs and you know, line managers are mostly American, British, Australian, whatever. So, you know, these people won't work till 11 at night and think that's normal. They won't stand for it. So therefore it trickles down and you won't have to do that either. Sony was it has a very kind of, in Japan, it has a very kind of cool global image. But Sony HQ, I mean, I always thought when I was communicating with people in Europe and America and the UK who worked at Sony, it always sounded like a cool place to work. But the Japan office is so Japanese, like so Japanese. I think it's something like under 5% foreigners working there. And there's about 2,500 people in that building. Wow. And that's including, you know, Chinese, Korean people who, you know, have been brought up in Japan, whatever. They get counted as foreigners on the Sony personnel site, whatever. But for me, I just found it being the only foreigner in my department was really tough. Just there was nobody to kind of, even though there wasn't a language barrier, but... And, you know, I kind of thought that having been here at the time, what, 6 years, I thought, okay, I knew what to expect, but kind of being in it every day, it was worse than I had imagined. So
there's that sort of sense of isolation.
Absolutely.
Even though you're among people, you're not one of them.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, you feel that so keenly when your whole group is one. You know, I always say that if you're a white person and want to know what it's like, you know, feeling discriminated against and come to Japan. Obviously, it's not nowhere near the same level or any kind of the same issues that, you know, people of color face. But being, you know, in a meeting, you know, my boss, the boss of the department, this older Japanese dude, classic, like, salaryman type, he would be like, Kurosbi-san, you know, like they call me by my second name. That was also a fight that I won, to be called by my surname instead of my first name, because that really bothered me. Everybody else was surname-san. I was Kyasarin-san. And it really got to me because we were all speaking Japanese and everything. And so I said, could you guys call me Kurosbi-san? And that kind of made an initial barrier between us, because they kind of thought, but we thought foreigners liked being called by their first name. And I was like, well, not in a Japanese working environment. I don't, you know.
To put that into perspective, that's like calling someone Miss Cat, like in a professional situation.
Yeah.
You wouldn't call someone Miss Cat unless they're a kindergarten teacher.
Yeah, exactly. So that really sort of niggled at me for ages. And finally, I said something about it. But in this meeting, you know, my boss would say, so Kurosbi-san, I hear that in Kaigai is, you know, anywhere outside Japan. So, you know, how many countries are there in the world? Actually, I don't even know, like 180 something.
Something like that
is classed as Kaigai, right? So he said, Kurosbi-san, in Kaigai, I hear this is how they do things. Is that true? And I was like, speaking as a representative of the rest of the world.
Yes, I know how they do it in Uganda. Yes. I'm from Kaigai.
Oh my God. So just that kind of, so what you're saying about isolation, you know, I had nobody I could turn to and be like, this is ridiculous, you know?
Yeah.
So it got me down. And so unfortunately I only managed to stick it out for 7 or 8 months, because when things get hard, I quit. No. But like, yeah.
I can't blame you.
Well, it was a good opportunity. I think somebody with a different personality and maybe different priorities, and maybe who would have thrived in that environment, but my personality just didn't mesh with the particular group I was in. Mm-hmm. I think other groups in the company would be very different. The personality of each group inside Sony is obviously, I hear that it's very different. So mine was just particularly kind of anal and paperwork obsessed and, you know, triple checking everything. And, you know, I had a boss who would correct my English despite the fact that she didn't speak English.
Oh God. Anyone who's worked, any foreigner who's worked for a Japanese company or worked for you will encounter that.
You know, they'll circle an and in your written, you know, I was a translator, so I would translate, you know, PR documents or whatever. And she'd circle an she'd do word corrections. So she'd like highlight it and be like, is this and necessary? In the Japanese, there's only one. And I was like, you do not understand what translation is.
I actually encountered this with my parents both do translating.
Oh, really?
But my parents are Japanese 100%. Uh-huh. They were born and raised in Japan. I was born and raised in the States.
Mm-hmm.
So English is my first language. Mm-hmm. For them, Japanese is their first language. But they understand English enough that they can get by, they can survive, they can make money being, you know, from their English knowledge. But they'll often ask me for help sometimes, like, you know, I don't understand, you know, well, what's a good way to say this? I try to say this, and it generally helps to have somebody who, you know, it comes naturally, who instinctively understands English. But I often find myself having to explain myself and not being able to. Mm. And just like, this goes like this because it works that way. It's just like, and it's really hard to like try to explain why when you instinctively know it, but
you're right. I mean, that's why actually I have a ton of respect for English teachers here, particularly people who teach English to people who know nothing, you know, answering questions. Why is it like that? Why is it like this? You know, that's extremely hard to answer if English is your first language. I mean, I find it easier to explain Japanese rules to people because Japanese is my second language, you know?
But English is how you learn
exactly
a language, with like the names of verb tenses and stuff like that, and parts of speech, where like if you ask the average American on the street, like, what is the present perfect? They're like, it's when the present time is really good, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, that I was asked that. That came up on a questionnaire once for like a job application, like for English teaching. I actually applied for a job for that. It's just like, you know, do the present perfect for, or past perfect for all these phrases. And I'm just like, what?
Like, first Google what the present perfect is. Yeah. And you're like, oh, that thing. Okay.
Yeah. And if you know what it is, you can answer that probably, but it's not something that you learn.
Yeah.
Unless you're actually like an English major or something like that, I don't think. But
being corrected by someone who doesn't even have like basic competency in that language. Oh my God. Every day I would come home from work and just like punch a pillow really hard.
And it's like, that's how it is doesn't work.
Exactly.
It's not, they need an explanation.
So this document would go back and forth, back in a Japanese office. Another thing, if you're going to work in a Japanese office, Japanese people tend to prefer, especially if you're a foreigner, even if, I don't know, this is my experience, so, you know, your mileage may vary, but even if you've proved that you're fluent in Japanese and that you know the rules and you're not going to pull any weird foreign tricks on them, like, you know, slamming your hand on the table or something, they'll prefer to communicate with you by email, even if they're sitting really close by you. So my boss was three desks away from mine in this little section. And I would get, you know, 10 or 12 emails a day, and they were long, you know, they'd be like a page of things she wanted me to do. And I was like, could we not have like a 20-minute meeting and knock all these out, you know? So this document would go back and forth and get corrected over and over, and then it would get sent to more Japanese people who would then correct it. And I use correct in the loosest possible sense. They would add their opinions on my grammar. Oh my goodness. As someone who really, I really like English grammar, and I take pride in the fact that my grammar is good. It drove me almost insane. And my friends were so sick of hearing about it that they were like, would you just quit that job already? One thing about that job is that it was well compensated, so that was why it was hard to quit.
One thing, like, talking about going back and forth by email and stuff, like, people always talk about how efficient Japan is. And you know what? Public transportation and stuff like that, that's quite efficient. Offices? No. So, Kat, what's the, other than email, what's another method of communication that people like to use?
Yeah. In Japan, you'll see the fabled fax machine.
What is that?
Fax machine. A lot of, for example, university applications, job applications.
Accounting things. I have to do like billing stuff, and I have to send faxes.
Yeah.
It's so ridiculous.
Is Japan like the only country that's
I couldn't still tell you maybe major... Japan and some maybe third world countries don't have broadband internet yet. Yeah, I mean, no offense to them. Fax used to be the quickest way to send documents back and forth.
It's just like there's this dinosaur in the office, and what the fuck is this? this belongs in a museum.
It's just like, it's making noise.
It belongs in a museum.
I seriously didn't know how to use one until I came to Japan, and I was like, thanks, Japan. If nothing else, you've taught me how to use a fax machine. They have them in convenience stores as well. Yeah.
Yeah. But like one of the reasons why people like to communicate by email is because traditionally Japan is such a non-confrontational kind of business culture that you get told what to do and you do it. And if you have a question, you just don't do it and stuff doesn't get done. Like I usually communicate in English in the office and sometimes I'll communicate in Japanese because I know XYZ person is not going to respond to my emails. Not even to say, sorry, can you please type this in Japanese? They'll just ignore my email. I could put like urgent at the top and they would ignore it because it's too hard to answer. Or even people who are really good at English might not respond if you have a question and they don't know the answer. Mm-hmm. So like business etiquette in the States, and I think in most of the West, says you respond to that person and say, we're looking into it or whatever. We'll try to get back to you by tomorrow.
You address the fact that they
say, I acknowledge that I received your question, but like you'll be waiting there and waiting there. And it took me about a year, 2 years to realize that they were actually getting frustrated when I was like, hey, did you get my email? Hey, did you get my email? Hey, what's going on with this? Cause that's the way I'm really pushy as it is. Why am I in Japan?
I hear you're aggressive.
This will go into our next conversation. If we're ready to move on to that.
Yeah, just about, I would say.
Yeah, this is going to, I just, one last thing I want to ask though is that going on the topic of emails, I don't want to make this go on any longer.
We could talk about this for years.
We probably could, but like.
I love emails.
have you encountered the how to write an email problem?
Oh, in Japanese, you mean? Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yes. I mean, I think Sarah's situation is a wee bit different in that I worked in a Japanese company, so all communication was Japanese.
Yeah.
And one thing was that I learned a lot of new words because I was doing a lot of technical stuff. But email in Japanese as well, you can't just dash off a line. You have to like structure it properly.
It has to start with the greeting.
A greeting.
And then,
to the person's name with the correct title. And then you start with a line about something random. And then you address the problem or question. And then you say, like, hoping for your cooperation on this matter. Yeah, and like, then you sign off with your name and your title. And it like, takes 10, 15 minutes to write.
I've had emails where basically I was asking, like, did you get this?
Yeah.
It took me like 30 minutes to write because I had to look up the proper Japanese on how to ask.
Hi. It took me 30 minutes.
Yeah, seriously, because you can't ask a direct question like, did you do this? Because it sounds too aggressive.
Yeah, it's like.
And especially if you're asking from below to someone higher than you, you have to really structure that like really delicately and be like, did you possibly have time to run your eye over the thing I sent you the other day? Not that it's that important, but that would be really great.
It would help all of us if that and I hope your family's well.
I usually gaijin and smash it. I like even if I'm sending stuff in Japanese, I'll do the like oh, I have a favor to ask. Then just ask the question really direct and then be like, thank you. And I'll be like, oh, my Japanese is really bad, so
excuses.
Yeah. One of the perks of being a gaijin, I guess, is that you can do that.
Yeah. You can, but Yutoshi can't.
Yeah.
Because he has the Japanese face.
Yeah.
But it's like your pride, though. How far are you willing to, like, put your pride aside? Because I spent all that time learning Japanese, and I'm proud of how good it is, right? And to kind of do that thing of pretending not to understand, it really hurts my pride. So sometimes I get into these situations where I'm like, I should have pretended not to understand.
So what did we do at the beach?
can we talk about this really quickly?
Oh, go on.
Okay. So Zushi Beach, you guys, I don't know if you guys have heard of it, but it's the beach that's really close to one of the naval bases in Tokyo.
U.S. Navy.
The U.S. Navy, I should say. The only one that matters.
Yeah.
Sorry, UK, sorry.
I think the ghost in the room wants to say
something. We'll talk about that in a minute.
So Zushi used to be the most popular beach, right?
Yeah.
And, so everybody used to go there and it used to be kind of a party beach.
Mm-hmm.
But then the city of Zushi, I guess it is, Zushi-shi, is it?
Yeah.
I don't know. They cracked down on drinking at the beach, exposure of tattoos at the beach, which is obviously related to kind of gang syndicates here.
Yeah, that's that's another topic for another
time. Oh, yeah, another one. Yeah, absolutely. What? Drinking in the on the beach, tattoos.
No drink, no music?
Music, that's right. Barbecues is a really common one. And so no,
no dancing, no fun.
No fun. So they're called the fun police. That's what we call them. And so everybody, it all kind of was rolled out this year, this summer. And so everybody was like, oh, how are they actually going to enforce it? Because a lot of the time in Japan, they say they're going to, they say this is the rules, but actually maybe not enforced sometimes. Yeah. But this time.
But they have it on paper.
They have it on
paper.
They
can enforce it.
Yeah, if they choose to, yeah.
So like a lot of places in Tokyo, you're not allowed to dance.
Mm.
Like in Shinjuku.
Like clubs, for
like
example.
Like clubs of most sizes. Mm. Unless the club is huge.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to dance. And you will see signs that say no dancing. And there's a ghost in our room waving
are
his
we allowed,
hand.
Are we allowed to acknowledge him?
Sure.
Does it
want to talk?
This is, what's your name again?
So mean.
My name's Tony.
This is Tony, our friend who came to hang out on the podcast.
Yes. He's a mooch.
He had nothing better to do. So
and your comments on the
topic
of dancing.
You have a comment on dancing?
Yeah, I just actually had a question for Toshi because I had heard that a lot the rule about not dancing in clubs was actually just kind of an excuse for police to be able to come in and shut the club down for some reason or if there was some sort of illicit activity going on, because a lot of places in Roppongi or in Ginza there may have some Yakuza involvement or something. So is that rule just an excuse to be able to come into the club and shut it down for some reason?
It's that I haven't really, because I've never really gone to clubs all that much, so I haven't really encountered that. But
you don't look like the type, which is not an insult. But,
I can see you with a glow stick and waving out.
Yeah, we're wearing one of those pacifiers. And, yeah. But it certainly sounds like it. It sounds like so that like they have, we can wave this piece of paper that says that we can shut you down. It seems like a safety measure. If anything.
Yeah, I think a part of me just doesn't want to believe that
I want to take a
Japan
picture.
Doesn't want anybody dancing.
Tony's
maybe
like,
that's the case.
Sorry. Well, okay, so in the 1940s, after World War II ended, there were a lot of GIs still in, like, even the Tokyo area. Mm. Where there are GIs, there will be quote-unquote dance halls.
Shenanigans.
dance halls. With the jazz music.
The evil jazz music.
Yeah. So, of course, these places had prostitution. Because correlation means causation.
Right.
If there is dancing, then there must be prostitution.
Mm.
So, prostitution, of course, is illegal in Japan. So they just banned dancing altogether. This ban apparently lasted quite a while, and actually it was still it's the same law, but they stopped enforcing it probably 60s, 70s, up
because
until.
Because it was fucking stupid?
Yeah, because it's stupid. Because this is not Footloose.
Mm.
And there's no Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, but I still have been in a club where they'll turn the lights on. It'd be 1 o'clock in the morning. Everybody's getting down. And then
getting down. Tony was born in the 30s.
I'm old.
He's a time traveling visitor from the
30s. Very old, yes. The doctor dropped me off.
Where's the air dirigible?
But I've been in a club at 1 o'clock in the morning where the lights will suddenly come on and whispers start going around to stop dancing, stop dancing.
Stop dancing.
And then the police come in, look around, and don't find anybody they can bust, so they just leave. And then
it's like speakeasies from the 1920s.
I've seen the DJ and the owner get arrested in front of me, like in a club I was in Roppongi, I think, one of the smaller kind of bar clubs. So like as Sarah says, there needs to be Japanese law about night entertainment. entertainment businesses, says there has to be a certain amount of a square footage for it to be a club. It's ostensibly about fire regulations, but, you know, because too many people dancing will cause spontaneous combustion.
All right? That friction.
All that friction.
Friction. Yeah. Mm. So, yeah, they came in, turned the lights on, and actually put the DJ in handcuffs. I was like, this is Footloose.
DJ?
Yeah, because he was kind of the DJ slash owner, but it looked so just kind of... So, like, what is this? You know, the DJ was walking out in handcuffs, and everyone was like, boo, turn the music back.
Did John Lithgow come out?
So, Japan is just, I don't know, it's so contradictory sometimes.
Yeah, so anyway, Zushi Beach.
Oh, anyway, so thanks, Tony.
So, Kat and I were at Zushi on a weekday. I wasn't at work. Oopsies. I was sick. Actually, I couldn't talk.
Needed a curative sea air cure, as in Victorian novels. Yeah. So we went to the beach.
A gentleman saw my ankle.
And I wheeled her in her bath chair onto the sand. And covered and tucked the blanket around her knees. And so we weren't sure how much they were enforcing this, because the effect of these ordinances meant that none of our friends, and especially none of the military guys, went to Zushi anymore, because they're like, right, well, we can't drink, we can't dance, we can't do anything, what's the point? Because that's what the beach is all about, obviously, drinking and dancing. So we went, and Sarah has a little tattoo on your...
Oh, it's about the size of a handprint.
Yeah, so it's not like back. It's not like full back or anything.
No. But it's a crow. Mm. And it's American traditional style, so it's not even Japanese style.
So then these two guys come over, and they were in full, like, kind of security guard type uniforms. It was 35 degrees Celsius. What is that, 110 Fahrenheit?
No.
Not that
190?
Much.
190? I can't do Fahrenheit.
High 90s, low 100s.
Sorry about that. Low 100s. These two guys come over, and they're dressed in these dark blue security uniforms. One of them is super fat, and one of them is super thin.
It was like... Abbott and Costello.
And they were
swear.
Dripping sweat, because they had these uniform caps on and they were running with sweat. And the guy just sort of goes, "Sumimasen, excuse me," hands over this little piece of paper that's written in English. And we got it twice, didn't we? It happened twice, right?
Oh, one time. Yeah, it happened twice. So the first time he came over, he gave me the pamphlet in English. Didn't say a word. He didn't say anything.
No.
He just came over and, like, handed it over, and the tattoo part, it said no tattoo, and had a picture, a graphic with someone with a tattoo.
With like a back, it was like a sort of,
it's like a
back tattoo,
yeah,
like a typical
know.
Yakuza yeah. tattoo.
And what did it say?
Like, it said no tattoos that cause, what was it? What was the word?
That disturb others?
Or no, it was... Intimidate. That's
intimidate,
what it was.
Yeah.
No tattoos that intimidate others. That's what it said in English. And so he came over the first time. I wasn't there. Second time he comes over, he hands it over again. And I said, and I hadn't even had any drinks, which usually if I have a few drinks, I get ornery and start replying in Japanese about things. But this time I was just angry. We were packing up to leave as well. So he was just being an asshole about it. He hands the bit of paper over, and I said, "Is her tattoo threatening anyone? Are you intimidated by it?" Like, in Japanese. And he was like, well, and then he answered with the best Japanese response, which is, "Kimatteru nde," which is like,
that's the rules.
Those are the rules. Right. And I was like, all right then. And I was like, good. What was it again? I said, like, shigoto kanbatte kudasai.
Yeah. Good luck with your job.
Like, keep working hard, kind of thing, like really sarcastically. So they were kind of upset by that, but it was a terrible job. Poor guys.
I mean, the fat guy.
He was struggling.
He was fat.
He was fat.
For a Japanese person, he was fat for any person.
He was large.
He was large. He was rotund. I pushed him back in the ocean, and I said, "Don't come back, Willie. You're free now." I cried.
So
Michael Jackson played.
Rolled him into the ocean.
Better than having him die and rot, so you have to blow him up with dynamite. But,
but like the whole tattoos thing is such a it has such a complex history in Japan. That's really fascinating.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
But that's a story for another time.
Another time.
I mean, all the beaches actually technically have rules that say no tattoos. So we went to one on Saturday, and there was a no tattoo sign.
Yeah.
But there were a ton of people covered.
Because that one's also close to the U.S. Naval base, and a ton of these enlisted guys have full arm sleeves and, you know, hugely massive detail tattoos. There was a guy who had a Japanese-style tattoo, which are generally more associated with, you know, crime syndicates here, but nobody was enforcing the rules. All there were these guys picking up in uniform, picking up trash from the beach, which I was like, good on them. So no, and maybe one of those guys came over and said, could you turn the music down? And we turned it down. And then when he went, we turned it up again. So, I mean, that's how it works in Japan.
Okay, Dad.
Okay, Dad. Jeez.
So it's on a beach. Okay. This got a little long, but
I'm an intimidating and aggressive woman.
Are we gonna talk about the dating scene now?
Yes, I think that's actually kind of why we brought you on.
Okay.
So, well, that was actually that's our topic.
Because you're a girl.
Because I'm a girl.
Because you're a hot girl, foreign girl living in Japan.
Awesome. So. I'll take that to the bank.
Well, you've been on magazine covers, haven't you?
Yes, Toshi, thank you. Yes, I actually have.
So, that definitely qualifies.
Just because you're on it, well, it's like, again, correlation. It's like magazine cover equals hot. Okay.
You know who else was on a magazine cover?
Was it Ladybeard?
Adolf Hitler. I'm just saying.
You just lost the argument. I was also in, I was in the Yomiuri Shimbun this morning.
Really?
Yeah, in color.
Ooh. That's like the main newspaper.
Yeah.
In context, what sort of article?
Just for my job.
Murder.
My job working, I work as a tour guide in Akihabara and in a maid costume, you know. It just happened. It snowballed. I don't even know why. And so they took a picture and they did a little article and it was like, Katharine-san who loves Japan. And I was like, well, I have conflicting feelings about Japan, but I'll take it. So, yeah.
So, getting to our topic, the dating scene. Mm. So how is the dating scene in Japan compared to, I guess, the U.S.?
The U.S.?
Or, I guess, the rest of the world.
Scotland.
I wouldn't even know. I haven't been there in, like, 7 years.
Or, I guess, compared to Gaikoku. little callback. To
as the spokesperson for the free world, Toshi, I will tell you. No. Well, I guess we have to, like, narrow it down a bit. Where do you want to start? Like,
I would say we should start with Charisma Man.
Oh, God.
Tony.
That can of worms.
Okay, so Charisma Man was a comic. A webcomic?
It was
quite old.
Way
like
back.
It was
like the late 90s.
The mid-late 90s, yeah. I assume a Canadian guy, because Charisma Man is Canadian. Kind of dopey in Canada, and he comes to Japan, and he turns into this buff, blonde superhero who Japanese women cannot resist. Mm. And his only weakness is Western women. Because when Western women come in and they're like, ew, he's such a dork, his powers get drained. And it's the most perfect thing in the universe to describe
some of the white men, but some. Many,
Tony.
A lot of those. No. Just to be clear, Tony is not Charisma Man.
I am definitely not Charisma Man.
You're not bland. You're bland.
You're not Canadian.
But you're not blonde. And he's not Canadian.
For starters, I'm not Canadian.
Toshi looks violated.
Tony just moved over for more microphone room. Because this is Tony's time to shine. Yes. Because he's a white man and therefore his opinion matters.
Okay.
So, I guess, okay, so you've got in Japan, and I guess, and we can only really talk about the metropolis, as in Tokyo.
Yes.
Because I have no idea what it must be like out in the Inaka, out in the sticks.
I don't even want to think about it.
well, you'd be all right. You'd be the only white man in the village. You'd be fine.
All the shufu would be like, yeah.
Hey, can you teach me ego in the afternoons?
Yeah, all the schoolgirls would crowd around you. Yeah.
Can we hang off your biceps?
I have thoughts about that. We can.
Okay, moving on.
Moving on. So what? I guess you've got the groups. You've got the white dudes here. You've got I suppose I should say.
It's white dudes, but I've noticed it's kind of a certain type of white dude.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to. There's this kind of stereotype here that white girls here are embittered, angry because we can't get a date. It's not the case. Like, I personally used to date Japanese dudes, and now I date white guys, or I should say non-Japanese. I'm sorry. That's really like, it's kind of really easy to say just white and you mean non-Japanese,
yeah.
Which is kind of, you know,
this
I'm not
is almost a
gaijin, right?
A part of the conversation that you can't skip over because they're just such differences in how maybe Japanese people view people from overseas.
Exactly. So
you almost get put in your own little cubbyhole, whether you want it or not. Mm-hmm. And that's one frustrating part about dating in Japan is as soon as you've come to the table, there's already a set of expectations that you have to either
worry
about or confront or conform to. It's a bit weird.
Mm. So, like, in the West, I've heard and I've read a lot of articles about, like, Asian women getting stereotyped as being very perfect wife material, will cook, will clean, will raise your kids, won't complain, very loyal, that kind of thing. And I think a lot of men from overseas, Kaigai, come over here expecting that. And there are women like that. It's not entirely false,
you know.
But it's the whole like Japanese culture of not complaining that they're getting that confused with being content with a relationship. That just because she doesn't say anything doesn't mean she's not unhappy. So a lot of guys come over here expecting that, and then there are relationships that work out between non-Japanese people and Japanese people. But there are a lot of issues as well. So, there have been some, like, even human rights issues with, people having kids with, Japanese women. The Japanese woman, very rare cases, but the Japanese woman becomes abusive to the children, maybe other things, and divorces the guy who's not from Japan. And we actually were having this conversation the other day.
Yeah.
Once you get divorced, you get deported.
Well, you've got no legal right to remain unless you find yourself another visa status. So you go and find yourself a company that's going to sponsor your work visa, unless you have already got permanent residency. So if you had a spouse visa and that's why you were in Japan, once you're divorced, you no longer have the right to remain. So even if you have kids, you don't have the right to remain.
You have no right to your kids.
No.
So men in general, Japanese men as well, once they divorce, they generally do not have rights to their kids if the ex-wife, the mother, doesn't want the man to have rights to the kids. So in the U.S., there are similar cases where, the U.S. system generally favors the mother. But Japan, it's like by default, they favor the mother. So there are plenty of cases where, children are being abused and the fathers have to kidnap the kids from school to save them from their abusive mother.
Take them back to the States,
take them to the States or wherever.
So they can't, so the U.S. will protect them under some convention of, child rights or something, but then they can never come back to Japan because they'll be arrested for kidnapping. So, I mean, that's an extreme example of breakdown in communication. So obviously I know many happy, interracial. Is that okay? Many happy
international
couples. Yeah. Very, very, happy marriages with a very cute, half Japanese kids. Personally, I kind of like every time the conversation turns to this, I'm like, allow me to catsplain you, because I was in a long-term relationship with a Japanese man, 4.5 years, and we were engaged to be married. So it was serious business, but it didn't work out. So, you know, it was a very good relationship, but it didn't work out. So it's not that I've never tried dating Japanese guys or that I'm instinctively biased against, or I'm not interested. It's not the case. It's just that I tried that for a good number of years, 6 years maybe, and it didn't work out. And I was like, okay, well, I've realized what's important to me is communicating in my native language. You know, even though with my ex, you know, we talked in Japanese all the time, and my Japanese is, you know, it's fluent. It's good enough to not have had a communication, a language barrier, but there was a cultural communication gap. You know, for example, if you think about getting into an international relationship where the other person doesn't speak English as a first language.
That's a nightmare.
Oh, I mean, imagine going to watch a movie. Like, you have to make, I mean, Japan, it's okay. But if I took him to America, for example, we couldn't really go to the movies because it wouldn't have Japanese subtitles. Couldn't watch comedy together because the jokes don't translate. That was a huge thing for me. Like, I didn't realize how much I cared about being able to laugh at the same things.
Yeah.
Mm. So, you know, that was a huge issue there. And
something that when I see successful international couples, I'm like, well, good for you guys for overcoming all the massive barriers there are to being happy and content together. Because there are loads, more than in your average relationship.
I mean, right? I'm even for me, like, because I speak two languages, I can date someone who's fully Japanese. I am dating someone who's fully Japanese. But there's always that part, that the English part, that I want to share, but...
Yeah.
There needs to be some effort put into, like, letting them, you know, letting the other person understand, you know, sort of getting them in on it.
That kind of feeling that, I don't know if you can sympathize with this or empathize with this, but the feeling that they never really know you.
Yeah.
Like, 100%, which was really frightening to me towards the end, because I started feeling like, if we get married and, you know, we're together, what? You know, at the time I was kind of having romantic visions of being together for forever kind of thing. And, you know, I was serious about this. It's not like I was thinking, oh, well, I'll get divorced if I don't like him kind of thing. I was like, right, this is marriage. This is a commitment. We're going to be together for a long time. What happens when we're 70 and we're sitting there and all the passion is kind of over? You know, well, might not be, but assuming it is, you know, the whole sexual side of things have maybe cooled off a little bit. What are we going to sit there and talk about? You know, essentially, like, your partner should be your best friend, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I realized that wasn't the case. So, and that we were so different, and that he never really, you know, when you speak Japanese, you're so different, like, you're a different person. I don't know.
Just, it's a different mentality.
Yeah, almost. It is, especially for women.
It's like almost like you're switching on a different part of your brain.
To
speak Japanese.
I would say so, especially for women, given that it's so gendered. The language is so gendered, and what you say is kind of like Japanese. Kind of, it's not. I don't think it's that hard a language to learn, because a lot of the responses are kind of like stock responses. Like, there are, like, when a situation happens, there are ways in which you should react, and so if you say this word. This adjective or whatever, or this reaction word, then everybody will be fine with it, and that's your predicted reaction. It's hard to explain, but it's not as, like, free form as an English conversation, I would say. Like, there's kind of barriers on either side that are kind of keeping everybody on the same track.
That's one of the stuff. That's basically like, yeah.
I see, yeah.
And, you know, it preserves harmony, right? And it preserves harmony. And I'm not saying it's a language, you know, that's devoid of, you know, emotional power or anything like that. Of course it's not. But it was always very hard for me to fully express my feelings.
It's different.
Different, yeah.
It's a different set of tools.
Yeah. So I guess all of us in the room have dated Japanese, fully Japanese people.
I've lived here about 4 years, and I have dated Japanese girls. And I was just going to add to what Kat was saying. I think, you know, my Japanese is not very good, but maybe even for people whose Japanese is very good, who are very fluent, one of the hardest parts about a relationship like that is when you're having a disagreement or you're angry at each other. Mm-hmm. Expressing yourself in a second language is... adequately is almost impossible, it feels like.
There's almost like this buffer that you have to get
through. It's like, and I mean, the language of being angry in English or in German or other Western languages is so different from being angry in Japanese. And there's nothing like swearing in your own language, right?
Yeah, so,
right. I mean, being angry at strangers is a completely different interaction in Japan than it is, say, in the United States or in the UK or somewhere else. So, I mean, and then imagine having that barrier on top of having strong feelings for somebody. It's a real challenge. Even if you understand each other technically, it's really difficult to have a very emotional exchange in a second language.
I would add to that I keep saying, but my Japanese is really good. No. I mean, I'm you know, I'm my job is speaking Japanese, so I'm fluent.
Yeah, you're.
But
I killed a hobo.
The one-up sentence.
That's like our stock one-up
default
thing.
One. Oh my, we need to talk about Foreign Girl now, Bun, a bit.
Oh yeah.
But just quickly, when I had fights with my ex, and I got really upset, and just, as Tony was saying, really frustrated that, you know, I was upset and I was speaking my second language. I would say things, not that I couldn't say things, but I would say things in Japanese that I would never say in English that were so hurtful. Because in a second language, you almost don't have a rein on how strong that word is or how strong that phrase is and how the kind of cultural impact of what you just said. You know, so if you, in Japanese, one thing you can say in a heated moment is die, right? It's like, shine, like die. And that's about one of the strongest things you can say to someone. I would never say that in English, no. But, you know, reversely, there are things that I would want to say in English that I would translate into Japanese and say to him. And he would just be like, I can't believe you said that to me. So it'd be the equivalent of him turning to me in English and going, I hope you die. So, you know, I just got goosebumps thinking about it. So, you know, there were cultural gaps like that are really hard to overcome, I think.
Yeah, I've kind of run into that in everyday situations, even in, you know, business situations where you're talking to a Japanese person whose English is not very good. And then they start saying, fuck this, fuck that. And you're like, you know, you probably should temper your use of that word. I mean, well, not in a beating or something.
Keep using that word.
I don't think it means what you think it means.
Do they really say fuck?
Not in a business context. I mean, I overstated it a bit.
But like drinking after the meeting, or something?
Going out drinking in mixed company, and then somebody has one or two beers, and they start, you know, fuck this, fuck that. And I just want to take them aside and say, you know, you should really... You know, I know you hear that on TV a lot, but you might want to tone it back just a bit.
I wonder if that's like... Because I've never encountered that. Like, I wonder if it's to men that they do
possibly,
that.
Possibly. I mean, using swear words a lot has this macho connotation, but, you know,
I think I've encountered that before, I have to say.
What Kat's saying is your appreciation for trigger words or really strong language in a second language is just not there like it is for your primary language.
Nah. Desho.
Desho.
So if you're looking to date a Japanese girl, or if you're looking to date a Japanese guy...
I mean, I know lots of people, like I say. I know lots of people, and lots of white girls, black girls, you know, I know an Indian girl, who are all here, and they're all into Japanese guys. And there are lots of... If you're looking for good-looking Japanese men, Tokyo is pretty much where it's at, because they dress snappily, they have great hair, they take care of their skin, they don't get fat until they're 40. So, just as a warning, so wait it out.
Happy birthday, boom.
Exactly. No one works out here. So, I say no one. That's a generalization. But most people don't exercise because they're naturally slim. Japanese people are naturally slim. Girls tend to, if they want to lose weight, they tend to just diet really excessively, like cut their calories down to almost nothing. So, we have the phenomenon of skinny fat in Japan where everybody is thin, but no one is healthy. Like they're like 90% fat and 10% water. Yeah. But that's a bit of a sidetrack.
They're like made of cartilage.
But the men are very attractive. Yeah. But personally for me, the cultural gap became too much to overcome. So I only date Navy men. No.
Yep.
It became, well, you hit a point where it became more about what's inside.
Toshi, I don't date ugly men. No. No, like what I'm saying is it's more about, it became the whole package, as it were, as in the flirting that goes on in English, the kind of the back and forth you can have with somebody in English, the hanging out at someone's house watching Netflix, in English, you know, and just the kind of, the lack of any kind of, hang-ups that might be culturally based, you know, even for me, I'm British, but you know, I'm mostly recently have been, in the last couple of years, been dating American guys. So even there's slight cultural difference, but it's nowhere near the kind of chasm that I'm talking about. So for me, it became more about the banter as well as the appearance. So yeah. Mm.
Yeah, and I have to say, let's get real talk here.
Oh God,
let's
really?
Get real talk.
I'm kind of pussyfooting around this. I don't want to be racist.
As a white woman,
white.
When I was a white woman. Why am I talking weird? I came over here. I liked Japanese guys.
Hmm.
Past tense.
Teeth sucking.
And I found with my personality type, my body type, my coloring, shall we say, as well, I was not popular with the Japanese guys.
Well, you looked really different when you came over, right? I mean, you look different now.
I wasn't that much heavier, though.
Oh, really? Okay.
No, I was maybe a size heavier. I'm really fit.
To be
right
clear,
now.
To be clear, Sarah's not fat in any way. But I just like to put that out there.
yeah, and also, like, my body type is not too different from a Japanese girl's. Like, I'm not curvy. I'm a curve.
You're athletic.
I'm athletic, but I'm not skinny. So, I was told, actually, I a friend who was telling me, like, not in a, like, competitive, bitchy way, but, like, I was kind of like, feeling sorry for myself, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, Sarah, you're very beautiful. And I was like, I know. she's like, but I think the thing is, like, you're not different enough looking.
I think that's
so. Cause I kind of got a big face, big round face. Real talk. I got tiny tits, like a Japanese girl. So I'm not, like, special enough. Mm. I do have green eyes, though, so... Mm.
You're very pretty.
Hi, everybody. Oh, but, like,
The boys are sitting there going, this got really girly really fast.
But I think that the bigger thing is my personality type, that I want to be someone's, like, best friend, like you said. Mm. I like watching action movies and science fiction and getting really passionate about stupid shit, And I'm very loud and very talkative, and I swear, and I don't like girly stuff at all. Kat.
So in a nutshell, you're aggressive.
Yeah. So, like, actually, this
you should explain, because I'm going to sound like an asshole.
This happened. Like, I got that comment a lot. Like, at first, I would get, oh, Sarah, you're interesting. You're interesting.
That's an interesting painting. Like, yeah.
That's an interesting painting.
What an interesting furniture arrangement.
Yeah.
What? That's such a, like, a no compliment. Why is that?
And when I first came here, I was really trying to assimilate. I was speaking Japanese. I was dressing in, like, Harajuku style fashion and stuff like that. I really tried. But
you have any pictures from that era?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I need to see them.
I couldn't tamper down the crazy. You can't contain the crazy.
No.
So, like, I tried going out with Japanese people, but, like, they'd be like, oh, sorry, you're interesting.
And then they say omoshiroi.
Omoshiroi, yeah.
I mean, that's kind of, like, funny, interesting.
Funny, interesting.
But, like, women, I think... I'm judging from, you know, social, cultural mores as seen on TV.
Yeah.
But omoshiroi women, like interesting, funny women, are not kawaii, are not cute. You're one or the other.
Yeah.
Female comedians here are almost uniformly fat, which is inherently hilarious in Japan, or ugly, or just unconventionally pretty. Mm. So you can't, as a woman, your function is not to be interesting/funny. And also in Japanese, it's hard because omoshiroi can be translated as both.
Yeah.
So I would say, I don't know, maybe they were saying you're funny. You're a funny girl. Yeah.
Well, because they would say it when I try to make a joke or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, even in Western culture, when a guy says, you're funny, it's kind of code for, like, I don't want to fuck you.
This is my first time on this podcast, so I'm really keeping a lid on the F-bombs guys.
Okay.
All the time. All right. Fucking awesome.
I think every single podcast has got, like, an explicit rating.
Well, when Toshi said it, I was like, okay, Toshi said it.
Yeah, let's get explicit. So, like, and then it kind of morphed.
What was that?
Because I was kind of sick of, like, trying to be somebody else. So I was like, you know what, I'm just going to go out and do whatever. And then I started getting the you're aggressive comment. And another thing here, like, is there, as a non-Japanese, non-Asian woman, going into, like, bars and stuff in certain areas, there will be the Japanese men, Japanese women, the white guys, and, like, okay, this is going to sound, you were talking about how good your Japanese was.
Mm-mm.
I'm going to talk about how hot I am.
Okay. Oh, no, that makes me sound like the plain, the yeah. plain but smart friend.
But Toshi called you hot. Okay. Okay. All right. So, all right.
Validation.
When I go out, I like to present myself like a beautiful peacock. And I want to get noticed. Who doesn't? Come on. Who goes to a bar or a club and wants to like hide?
Yeah. I mean, Sarah and I, we tend to go out, either Friday and Saturday. And then Sunday is playing horror games or watching horror trailers or watching horror movies and eating pizza. Yeah. So that's how we
get into a little bit, but basically just recovery for the next
week. Yeah. Tony's usually there.
I'm usually there. Yeah.
So that's how the weekend rolls out. So when we go out, we tend to like, slut it up, like, you know, just to use a scientific phrase, like, you know, like put on makeup, you know, wear a short skirt, put on high heels and go out, you know, that's the function of, yeah, being going out and being noticed,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. yeah. But like you'll walk into a bar or a club and nobody looks. And I'm like, this is going to sound so like against feminism and stuff like that, but like the difference is I'm in control. Everybody knows I like to be in control. So I mean, if I'm like not wearing any makeup, I'm in my flip flops, I'm in like warm up pants, going to the supermarket, I don't want people talking to me. But like if I'm going to a club and I'm like, I put on my sparkly tank top for this,
that used to be mine, but
I want to talk to people and I'll talk to anybody, like that. But there will be certain guys who will not talk, not look.
And not have their cell phone suddenly ringing.
Sorry.
Sorry. She's so popular. People are calling her in the middle of the podcast. Yeah. That never happens to me because anyone who would call me is sitting right here.
Hello.
Not even wearing
Hello.
Your sparkly top.
Jensen, I told you not to call me anymore.
So, are you actually talking? Okay. Good. But like, when I went to America, recently, you know, and it's not that nobody will look, it's that, they, like as Sarah was saying, there'll be pockets of white dudes.
Pockets
of them. There'll be pockets of white dudes that you're just like, okay.
It's like a weather formation.
Yeah, it is. Like a weather formation. It's like cumulonimbus over there, like low-hanging white guys.
White guys.
Low-hanging white guys, sudden showers. But you'll just know, like, you'll just get this kind of atmosphere that they are not interested in you because you're white. I mean, and because you're not a Japanese woman.
It's the whole charisma man thing where you remind them why they left Kaidai.
And it's like, sorry, am I reminding you of America? Sorry.
And there, we had an incident. Can I talk? The Danish guy?
Oh, which was that?
The guy in Tatsumichi?
No, I don't want to talk about that. I mean, too distressing.
Okay. All right. So last weekend? The weekend before last, we went out and, there was a bikini party.
Oh yeah.
And, I was in a bikini top. I was wearing tasteful shorts.
They were tasteful.
They were tasteful.
they were pretty short.
And there was this, I was ordering a drink at the bar and there was this Welsh guy. It's always a Welshman who came up to me and he's like, did your mother let you go out of the house looking like that? And I was like, What? Like, I wasn't sure if I heard him right. Mm. And he's like, you should put a shirt on.
Oh, so he wasn't hitting on you. Well, like, making an opening line for
no, he has to work on his negging.
Okay. Yeah, right. He was doing the pickup artist kind of thing where he was like, gonna break me down
and then build you up again with compliments.
Yeah.
With like Pygmalion. Strategic negging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was mad because he was ugly.
He was.
And I was talking to his friend. Who I wasn't, like, hitting on his friend. I was just talking to his friend. And he didn't know how to interact with girl.
Human female.
Human female.
Human female.
How do stick and tickle.
Exactly. So, you know, to approach a girl with a woman with that kind of, you know, incredible
abroad
with that incredibly like sexist like comment, you know, to say, did your mother let you out of the house like that? Oh my God. I mean, what guy thinks that's going to work? But that kind of really aggressive approach, I mean, I've actually encountered that more here, going out in Tokyo, yeah. in you know, foreigner-heavy places like Roppongi, mostly Roppongi, actually, that have, you know, a lot of English teacher types who, you know, go out on weekends. I've encountered that more here than I have anywhere yeah. else in the world.
Do you think they... I'm not a Japanese girl, so I don't know. But do you think that's what they use for Japanese to pick up Japanese girls?
Not like that. Okay. I don't think. But a lot of them don't speak Japanese, so they might say. I don't know. I don't think they. It would be interesting to just take a video camera, like a hidden camera kind of thing, and see how they do it with Japanese girls. And like,
do it as in pick up.
Do it. There was another instance where I was like in a group of people, and this Australian guy comes up to me and he's like, you know, you're really pretty. And I was like, thank you. And he's like, you know, you probably don't hear that a lot here in Japan. And I was like, you failed.
I see where he was going with it.
But you know what? I was like, why would you say that? And he's like, oh, I wasn't flirting with you. I have a Japanese girlfriend. I'm like, good for fucking you.
Wow, who feels the need to say something like that? That's incredible to me.
Yeah.
That like a human being would say that to another human being.
Yeah.
And again, I should say.
I would say that to Tony.
Yeah.
She often does.
But it's, again, it's not all white guys. You know, it should be a hashtag, not all men, not all white men. But there is a disturbing proportion. And that is where the kind of bitter white girl stereotype comes from.
I was going to just mention that, again, not to generalize, but Japan is so different and it has such a sort of weird reputation in some ways that it does attract a certain demographic of. Mm-hmm. Men who are, I won't say maladjusted, but...
Present company accepted.
Yes, of course, I don't include myself in this. But who use these kind of techniques on girls, especially white girls, because it seems like they come from an environment where they think that white girls are bitchy and...
Aggressive.
And that if only they can find a Japanese girl who'll just... You know,
men
think that they're God,
mm-hmm.
they'll be happy. And so when they approach a white girl, they have this kind of, there's this bitterness to how they approach
absolutely.
Women.
Especially when people are drinking. I mean, I'm not talking, these aren't like cold approaches. Yeah. Like these are like in a bar where everyone's pretty drunk, you know. So obviously social rules are kind of broken down a bit. But that kind of aggressive, negative approach, like I say, that's never happened to me in Australia, the UK, America, places I've been out, English-speaking countries I've been out, never happened to me before. And it's happened, like, multiple times here. I think another thing is that, you know, and again, not to be like, I'm so pretty, but, like, Sarah and I, you know, attractive girls in our 20s, you know, we dress up when we go out, we look nice when we go out. And I think it kind of ruins the idea that all white girls are bitter, fat, ugly, anime obsessed, you know, when we're normal people and, you know, we look nice when we go out and we're not, you know, Russian hostesses, whatever. But it kind of offends them that their stereotype has been upset. And, you know, it's not just us. I know tons of attractive non-Japanese girls in Tokyo and they all have a story like this where they get approached by aggressive, negative white guys. And I mean, what I'm like always like, what do these guys want out of this interaction? Like, do you want me to slap you? I mean, I guess they want attention, right? I mean, that's what negging is about. I don't even know. God, sometimes it just gets to you. But I've met I'm not gonna cry.
You're a woman. I know you're overly sensitive. You know what? I heard that women like chocolate.
Oh, just shove it in my face before I start crying.
I've heard stuff like that from Japanese women as well. I have a couple Japanese friends who they don't like Japanese men. Mm. They prefer white guys because they treat them better than Japanese men. And they say it's hard to find a non-Japanese guy who thinks of Japanese women as human beings.
Mm.
That they expect her to not have an opinion. And like this one friend, she's so funny, and she's really into Spider-Man and, like, action movies and
that's
stuff.
Awesome.
And, like, I'm like, you know, you could go to the States and you'd be
clean
super popular.
Up.
Clean
go
up.
Go
to any convention, you would just have them lining up to,
she's
like,
hot,
to kiss
she's
you.
She's smart.
Yeah.
She's independent, and I think that bothers a lot of them because it's the whole like smashing the stereotype thing.
I think also, I mean, I've been privy to, like, you know, you overhear just at the beach the other day, there was this white guy telling his black friend who's younger than him, telling him how to pick up Japanese girls, and he was like saying, don't tell her your name at the beginning, don't introduce yourself, let her want to know you. And I'm like, I like turned around and was like, or you could introduce yourself like a human being and treat her like a human being. He didn't like us, you know, questioning his pickup artist techniques. And, you're right, Toshi, right. It gets so just, oh. But on the other hand, I have met some very nice
Navy.
Navy. Yes. Navy. Salute to the Navy. I've met some very nice non-Japanese dudes recently. And obviously, I think we should talk about how people meet people here. Because there's the bar scene.
Well, I tend to yell at people on the street until they come over.
Sarah yells at people across the street. It's like, you, over there, come here.
You, I'm gonna fuck you.
And seriously, the success rate of this is actually incredible. All the men sitting out there going, I wish I could do that to the girls on the street. Like, just seriously.
That's not true.
But
we all know it's true.
Okay, so there, we talked about the bar scene a little bit, and obviously the big clubbing areas are Roppongi, for most foreigners, Roppongi, a little bit classier is like Hiro and Ebisu, then you've got Shibuya and Shinjuku, Shibuya for clubbing again, but mostly that's a Japanese scene, mostly young Japanese scene, and then Shinjuku, which is mostly bars, but lots of foreigners there.
Red Light District.
Yeah, lots of foreigners there because there's lots of hotels there, but apart from that, there's also, of course, OkCupid. There's Tinder. For the gay dudes, there's Grindr. There's Blender, which nobody uses.
Blender?
Blender is like the straight Grindr. That's like it's like Tinder, except Tinder got more popular.
Oh, okay.
Tinder is fun in Tokyo, I gotta say. Has anyone here met up with someone from Tinder yet?
Yes!
Oh. All right, I have.
Well, somebody recognized me on the street.
That's different. That was an accidental meeting.
People just recognized me on the street.
That was so funny.
On this podcast.
I just remembered that, actually. We were in Roppongi, and we were standing outside the club just having some water or something, and this guy walks past, and then he comes back, and he's like, hey, are you Sarah?
And I was like, I don't know what to say. Should I say yes or no?
Yeah, and then he was like, I think I saw you on Tinder. And like, in a city with, like, however, what is it, 20, how many million people? 20 million people. And given that the gaijin community, the foreigner community is like 1% of that, the odds, if you're dating within the kind of foreign pool here, the odds that you're gonna meet someone again are very high.
Oh, yeah.
And like the Tokyo thing, when you go to a party that's mostly foreigners and you friend somebody on Facebook, odds are that you've got two or three people in common already.
Yeah.
Because the network is like so connected. So it's best to be political when you date. Like, don't, like, leave the campsite better than you found it. Like, don't be a dick or else you're going to meet them again and you're going to look like an asshole.
Yep. And there's another, so some of us have sort of come up with this little word game joke where, so you know the word for foreigners is gaijin or gaikokujin. So we've come up with this game where you insert the word, the phrase jin into other words in English as a sort of things that happen to foreigners. And one of those words that we came up with is the term jincest. Which is basically, the problem that Kat just explained, is that if you meet a group of foreigners and you make a group of friends, even if you try to keep them separate, eventually one person will enter into that dynamic that links those two groups, and then all of your dirty secrets will be revealed.
In short, everybody has had sex with everybody else.
Basically.
Why do you think I go after tourists? Welcome to Japan.
Oh, you're leaving tomorrow? What a shame.
Oh.
So Tinder is interesting. You get a lot of visitors but there's a ton of Japanese dudes on Tinder, a ton.
Yeah.
So I don't know how many Japanese girls are on there. I have mine. I'm bisexual, so I have mine set to girls and boys. So, but when girls come up, either it's foreign girls who are actually into girls, I'm like, cool. A lot of Japanese girls have set their preferences to interested in women, but then you look at their little profile and it says, I want to make friends. And I'm like, you're on the wrong app. Do not make friends on Tinder. It's not what it's for. So yeah, just a little heads up public service announcement there. Don't set your thing to looking for friends. That's not what it's about. But yeah, Tinder, girls, foreign girls out there who are looking for a Japanese dude, get on Tinder. Oh my God. There's tons of guys on there.
It's kind of interesting because if you go, the closer you go to like the naval bases, the more white guys there are on Tinder. So it's like
non-Japanese.
Non-Japanese guys. Because it's obviously geographically based. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yeah, that's a whole nother part of this conversation, which none of us are qualified to talk about, which is that the three of us are white, and so yeah. being a person of color in Tokyo is quite complicated.
Calm down, we're Tony. Not,
and we probably shouldn't talk.
I'm kidding. No. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There is white privilege in Japan. Definitely. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. I've heard stories, and I have friends who are not white who. I have friends who are not white.
Congratulations.
Yay. Racism gone.
It's a post-racism world.
Yeah. Who have said, like, Japanese, especially women, Japanese men do not see them as sexually viable mates or whatever. Mm. They're just, like, a curiosity to some extent. And then maybe a... I hate to say it, but like an experiment at worst, which I think is so disrespectful. Mm. I never got that, like, I want to know what it's like to sleep with a black man. I never got that. It's like, come on. Not to be cliche and Tumblr-y, but people are people.
Yeah.
It's true. We all have to put our pants on one leg at a time, except for me. I just jump right in.
Oh my God, where did that end up going? But I've definitely, and I think a lot of that links into the beauty ideal here is pale skin. If you go to a beach in Japan, the foreign people will all, the girls will all be out and, you know, as little as possible. But then a lot of the Japanese girls will cover up. But although these days there's actually more girls I saw at the beach just in little bikinis and stuff. So foreign guys, come to the Japanese beach. Yeah, you won't regret it.
I just want to mention that. There seems to be two types of Japanese girls at the beach. They're the ones who go, who cover up, so they've got their bikini on, but they've got, you know, a shirt
or something. And a parasol.
Or they've tied their sweater around their waist, or, yeah, they're in a parka. Or, like, they basically don't want to show off. They're there because their friends are there, but they don't really want to show it off. And then you've got girls who are in the tiniest bikinis you've ever seen, full makeup, hair completely done, in high heels.
Oh my God.
I saw one in high heels. She was in white 3-inch platform heels.
I thought she was kind of awesome. On the beach. I thought she was kind of awesome. I kind of thought she was.
Own it.
But on the sand.
But still, yeah. I mean, high heels at the beach, come on.
Japanese beach is not like Kaigai beach, okay? No, like, you have to go and look nice.
It is.
Right? You're not meant to get in the water.
It's for being seen.
Yeah. So I have worn fake eyelashes to the beach.
Yeah.
So I can't comment.
I don't care.
So I can't comment.
I have the ability to point at people on the beach and be like,
oh, whatever. God. But what I was saying about the kind of hierarchy of beauty kind of thing is the Japanese beauty ideal is as pale as possible. I mean, that's common to most of Asia, I think. In Thailand, there was a lot of whitening creams and stuff for sale. Skin as white as possible, big round eyes.
Long hair,
pale eyes as well. And slim.
Thin at any cost.
It's very slim, tall, if possible. A lot of Western women fit into that ideal. So
slim.
Well, you know, I'd say, you know, a lot of the models here are almost exclusively Russian. Russian 15-year-olds, you know, they're beautiful, but they're, you know, children and really, really beautiful girls, but with the tiny face and the big eyes, and, you know, but to be, I imagine being a woman of color here, that must be so hard to see, like, oh, your skin is dark, therefore it's bad. Therefore, there's no makeup for you, for one thing.
Yeah.
There's all these creams are designed to make Asian skin lighter. What if you're a black girl? I mean, you're below, like, you're darker than Asian people. So what is that saying to you? So I just think that must be really hard. Can't not qualified to comment.
Yeah. If you want to get an idea of the sort of ideal foreigner, it would be somebody like Katharine Hepburn, somebody very, very thin.
Audrey Hepburn.
Or, I'm sorry.
Oh, Catherine Hepburn. Audrey Hepburn. No, I knew.
Audrey Hepburn, more modern. Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift. Japan loves
a deer. They want a fawn. They want Bambi, basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, Taylor Swift's beautiful. But yeah, she's like the ideal foreign girl there. I mean, that's the ideal. She's all over magazines and stuff. Another one is
Cara Delevingne. I can't pronounce her name. She's a supermodel. Again, same kind of type. But so even as a white girl here, I mean, I'm short. I'm 160 centimeters or 5'3". So being short here is, I'm kind of the same height as a lot of Japanese women, but I'm not like the massively long legs, tall, 6 foot tall model type. So that can sometimes be a little bit intimidating when there are Russian models walking around at large. You know, you go into a convenience store, they're standing next to you, and you're like, don't stand next to me. So yeah. What were we talking about before?
Before Sarah's phone started ringing?
I'm sorry.
And you're so popular, I can't even get over it. Mine has not even buzzed once.
I should actually probably
okay.
get it.
Hold on a second.
Oh, okay.
All right, and we're back. And we're back.
Forgive me.
Oh, God. And so I guess this is kind of cutting it short, but we're kind of also running short on time. Yeah.
So we can
probably... I mean, you definitely want to come back.
Oh, for sure. Yes. My God, I love the sound of my own voice.
Yay!
as you hack up along, yeah.
She's got black lung pop.
But there was one more thing you wanted to talk about. Something you guys do on the weekend, you mentioned earlier about...
Fridays we go out. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't go out.
Fridays and
Saturdays.
Fridays and or Saturdays.
Saturdays we go out, and then we pass out in Tony's house. Mm. Sometimes on the floor, sometimes in other places. We try to aim for a couch. Sometimes we miss.
Tony has a giant bed, so sometimes we all just end up in there.
And then on Sundays, we like to scare the shit out of ourselves.
Okay.
So this is video game news.
Yes.
It's been on Kotaku. There have been theories on Kotaku, which is awesome. Everybody should check out the articles on those. Hideo Kojima of Metal Gear Solid fame.
My favorite
and
game.
Guillermo del Toro of movie fame.
Yeah.
Pan's Labyrinth, Hellboy,
yeah.
Pacific Rim, and Norman Reedus! Daryl from The Walking Dead are involved in a new Silent Hill game.
It was put up on the PlayStation Network as it's called PT, which is short for playable trailer.
But some people think it's short for the Latin name for a tree.
Oh my goodness.
You didn't see that?
No. And I thought it was playable teaser.
Oh.
Toshi, just to, like, correct you there.
Sorry, yes, no.
To be fair, we didn't
Benicio
know.
Del Toro?
I was gonna bring that up myself. I posted, I recently, because we've been watching playthroughs of PT so much that every time one of us goes down a corridor, we, like, take a creepy picture and put a filter on it and, like, Instagram it.
I'll put it on the Twitter, actually.
Oh.
Because they're really, really
I took a really good scary. One today, and I did the Instagram thing that tilts it slightly, and it looked really creepy because there was a Japanese dude, like, walking down it.
And he wasn't walking
And he wasn't
straight.
Walking, he was just standing there. I don't want to go home now.
But, for people who have no idea what we're talking about, it turns out that once you get through it, it's a playable teaser, but which is basically it's a horror puzzle game.
And
once you get through it, it turns out it's a I guess you could say it's a teaser for the next Silent Hill.
Do they still call them FMVs, full motion video? Is that do we still use that term? What
cutscene?
But it's like you play the game, and then if you manage to solve the puzzle, you get
a cutscene.
Yeah, okay. God, FMV, that's back from like PlayStation 1. none of us own a PlayStation. Do you own a PlayStation 4, Toshi?
Yes.
Oh, you do. Okay, so none of the three of us that hang out at Tony's house all the time have a PS4. Mm-hmm. We are all three of us really into horror, but I personally scare really easily, and I think Sarah does as well. But it's kind of that kind of scratch the itch thing where you want to be scared, but you don't want to think about those things
That's
forever.
Such a good description of it.
Like, oh, yeah. I always, whenever we're sitting there going, what do you want to watch? These guys are like, let's watch a comedy. I'm like, no, horror again. So I'm a huge Asian horror fan myself, even though I'm like scarred for life by these movies. Oh my God, Ju-on was so bad.
And then after we're done, she says, Tony, walk me to the bathroom. The bathroom's like 10 feet.
Tony has a scary corridor in his house. Tony is one of the few privileged few who have a two-story house in Tokyo. So he has a scary corridor and the light is now broken for some reason.
Yeah.
So
oddly, it happened right after we finished playing PT.
I'm not saying demons, but demons.
So this, I mean, you can look up playthroughs online. You could get the teaser.
It's free
if you have a PS4.
If you have an account, you can just download.
You wake up in a kind of like a basement room or something, and you open the door and you're in a hallway in a house, and it looks like just about any American house.
Yeah, and it's really well lit and everything, and it's not like super scary, spooky scary.
There's some like bottles lying around. It's just like, okay, they're kind of dirty.
They had a barbecue.
And it's a little dusty.
Yeah.
So you walk through and you make it to a basement door. You go down a couple steps and you open the door and you're back at the beginning of the hallway.
Mm.
It's like an L-shaped hallway. So, of course, there's a corner. You're going to turn around. There might be something. So it's so fucking creepy. So Kojima set out to make something that would make you shit your pants.
And that's like a direct quote.
Yeah. And he's like, I want people to shit their pants.
What I found really adorable was that Kojima actually was quoted as saying he hates horror movies because he gets so scared. And he was like, right. And then actually I was thinking, well, isn't it perfect to get someone like me or like someone like Kojima or someone like Sarah to make a horror film? It would probably be the scariest thing ever because you're so attuned to what is scary because you're a scaredy cat, right?
Yeah.
So he and not Benicio del Toro, Guillermo. Take me away, Guillermo.
Guillermo, take me to your beard.
Take me to your hallway. Don't take me. I don't want to go to the hallway. So Sarah, just the sort of little lead up on why we're obsessed with PT. Sarah messaged us and said, "Oh my God, guys, this is the scariest thing ever. Oh my God, this is so fucking scary."
I believe my exact quote was, "I enter shat enter my enter pants."
Yep, I think that was the direct
enter,
quote.
Full stop.
It was. On Facebook Messenger, it was that. And you know, when people say, this is the scariest thing ever, you're like, whatever. Right. I've seen my share of independent Asian horror. I know what's scary. Mm-hmm. And then, so we were like, okay, I'll watch it when I get home. And she ended up coming over to Tony's house on a weeknight, which almost never happens. And we all watched it on Tony's big screen TV in the dark. And it was terrifying. It was so scary.
You should see my face right now. I'm like,
Sarah's watched it way too much.
She's reliving it right
after
now.
We started watching PT, I got obsessed with it and started reading all about it and watching, looking for cutscenes and like looking at still images. And I couldn't sleep for 2 days. I slept so badly. And
one of the most fascinating things is that it's basically a puzzle.
Yeah.
And you get through it, you get the cutscene.
Don't give any spoilers.
But the thing is that the people who solved it don't know how they solved it.
I love that.
They're not like, I did this, and this happened, and this happened, and this.
And it's kind of random every time.
Yeah. I was going to say, one of the genius things about it is when you play it for the first time, or even if you replay it, you don't know what you're going to get. Some people, you can walk through the hallway 10 times, and maybe you just didn't notice what it was.
Ooh, that's so crazy.
There was one playthrough.
Or you look out the window, and you do notice.
The window!
Please don't remind us of the window.
I won't say. I mean, but there are so many opportunities for scares.
I could see it.
And you don't know whether you're just missing it or if it's about to come.
Yeah.
And sometimes not doing anything will
trigger the event. There have been people
Not know what's going to happen.
I've read a lot of people who gave up because they couldn't trigger the final event. And there are multiple theories. There's a really cool one that like uses the microphone on the controller. I love that. That kind of interactivity.
I think there was one theory that like you need to be streaming it. Like you need to like be broadcasting it so other people can see that.
Oh, that's genius. That's awesome.
So there's like one theory that the game might be interactive with other people because it's the theory is, so the name of the game is going to be Silent Hills, which could mean there are two hills in the town, or it could
multiple
mean
multiple towns.
There are multiple.
It's an MMO or something.
Yeah, alternate universe versions of this town, Silent Hill.
No idea.
That would be so I just cool. Chat my pants.
Again,
that.
Great. Thanks.
And Norman Reedus.
Yeah.
Sarah and I really, really, really like Norman Reedus. So if he's listening, you should come to Tokyo.
We know your real first name. It's Mark.
Why would you choose Norman over Mark? But anyway, that's his
name. And his kid's name is Mangus Lucian Reedus. I just love that. He's from California, seriously? But he's like a hick by choice.
Yeah, so he's like chooses these hick names. But PT, to just quickly go back to that, the fact that it also has one of the scariest kind of Asian horror ghosts that I have seen in a long time. Like, as in the face? Oh, my God. As in, this isn't a spoiler to say that there is something there. I mean, you're kind of going to get it. Yeah. But I'm not going to go into detail.
Is it a cupcake?
No, it's not a cupcake. No. Honey. it's really, really scary. And I was just, I went in with really low expectations, especially when someone sells it to you.
Yeah, because I was messaging Kat and Tony. We have like a Facebook group. It's very
private.
Exclusive. And I was like, I had to message them because I didn't know how to handle it. By the way, I saw this in the middle of the day. Right on my like tiny laptop screen. I had to stand away from my computer. I was standing like getting further and further away from the screen. And I was like trying to get more sunlight to come in because sunlight is their weakness. I don't know.
But, like, I messaged my friend, my friend, Chad, who is,
Hi, Chad.
He likes horror too. And he's like kind of a big, strong man who isn't scared of things, right?
And he speaks Russian.
And, he is, not scared of stuff. So I messaged him and said, oh, this is super scary. You should watch it. And he was doing the night shift. He's Navy. He was doing the night shift. And he goes, okay, yeah, I'll watch it. And like 10 or 15 minutes later, he just messages back going, fuck! And I was like, yes. So I'm basically trying to spread the word of everyone should watch PT.
I have no idea how this is going to come out as a game.
There's no release date, right?
No.
I mean,
they don't even know if they're going to make it, right? Is that correct?
They're not 100. I mean, they want to make it, obviously. I mean, they wouldn't have said otherwise. But I think right now Kojima's main focus has to be Metal Gear Solid 5, right?
Yeah, that's right. When is that coming out?
Not 100% sure. I should know, but I should know if they announced anything, but not 100% sure.
Mm. Personally, after playing that, I would be fine if it just came out as a series of vignettes with no story attached.
I mean, the atmosphere is so awesome. And the other thing I wanted to say was, we got into horror games kind of recently. The three of us watched a lot of horror movies, but we downloaded this game called Outlast. Which is a quite famous survival horror game where you're a journalist who really intelligently goes to a mental hospital, an asylum, armed with a camera and a pen and a notepad in the middle of the night to investigate the strange goings on. And you're really smart. And oh, what an idiot, honestly. And so you go into the asylum, and within 10 minutes of the game starting, it's like, new objective, escape the asylum. And I'm like, well done, genius. But we're playing that, and we were really scared by because it's first-person survival horror, scary, you know, crazy people, deformed, you know.
Well-made as well.
Really well-made with the Unreal Engine, so it looks really good.
Gory.
Really gory, but
shit in a toilet.
Oh, God, yeah. And giant naked people. But anyway, no, it's a creepy, creepy, scary game with lots of, like, psychological horror aspects. But having watched the playthrough of PT, we didn't even play it. We didn't even play it. And I feel like we're kind of fakes here by going, you guys should play this.
Fake
geek girls. We watched multiple playthroughs. And now Outlast is not scary anymore. Like, we just go, I'm like, I'll just play this in the dark with some headphones on.
Yawning.
So
naked guy.
Oh, here's the creepy, crazy guy. Oh, great.
Oh, he wants to rape me. All right.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah,
under the bed.
So
glowing praise for PT.
Oh, everyone, I think it's awesome. I mean, I really hope, because one thing I heard was that the game might not be at all related to that short, like to the teaser.
It's a teaser, so there's no real.
I just really hope the atmosphere is preserved, because I kind of felt that like part of the genius of that is how small the arena is, and the fact that it's so contained and you can't Get Out. And the reaction of the people playing the teaser when they realize it's an endless loop is great. Like, some people are like, oh.
Yeah, we watched the Game Grumps one. I'm a big fan of the Game Grumps. If they're listening, they're awesome. Hi. But
Spooky Scary was added to the
scary.
added to the vocabulary.
Yeah. They didn't even get the scariest version of it. And Dan was the one of the hosts of that show, rival show, I guess. was like, he left the room because he was so scared. And the other guy had obviously played through it, so he kind of knew. And he was like looking up. So if you're playing, take a peek up at the balcony. Yeah,
no one does that. And we know there's something there from the screenshots. Why did I look at those? And so look up at the balcony at one point and it's random. So you could do it 12 times and it might not happen.
I was going to say, I'd like to go and look at some of the theories people have on like, what are the mechanisms? It sounds to me is like pigeons spinning around in Skinner boxes, like trying to get food.
Stop just with your folksy speak.
Random, right? people are just flailing for any explanation of what triggers what.
Yeah, there's no actual like sort of equation like I did this so it caused this. Mm. There's no sort of causality thing going on. So it's creative as hell.
I don't want to think about it. Turn around.
No. Stop saying that. Jeez.
There was nothing there. It was one of those random ones. I didn't get the big scare.
So if you don't ever want to sleep again, go ahead and watch one of the playthroughs. Any of the playthroughs will do. Buy the game. I mean, get the game.
Get the game. Free. It's not for sale. It's for free.
Download the game.
If you have to pay... I can't even talk. If you have to pay for it, you're getting it from the wrong source. Yeah. So, Kojima, Del Toro,
kudos to you guys.
Yeah.
Reedus. I can't believe I forgot about him.
Reedus.
Stop it.
I have a headache now from being scared.
So yeah, we've gone a bit long this time again as always,
explain everything.
You guys will be back.
Yay!
So
love to be back.
Thank you. This has been the Wayward Podcast, part of oneofus.net, World of Us Cast, and you can email us at
waywardpodcast@gmail.com
or follow us at waywardpodcast on Twitter. And usually we have a thing where we go out, we have an outro, you go, you know, you pick a random song, Japanese song, and
we sing it.
No, we don't sing it. No,
because I was just gearing up for some kind of karaoke. Like,
no, we go out on music. I put in the music later, cool. But it alternates between me and Sarah, but you're our guest this time. So if there's any song you want to go out on.
We get to play a song?
Yes, we play a song.
Awesome.
We overlay it on the audio. I'll add it later. But.
Cool. All right, let me think. Can I have my best karaoke song?
Okay.
My ohako, if you will. My number 18, which is your best karaoke song.
Yes.
I can't even remember the title now. Shina Ringo.
Mm-hmm. That's the artist.
That's the artist. And I can't remember the name of this song.
Oh, dear.
I will usually only select it by the, like... yes, I remembered. Okay. It's called Sumitobatsu. So Sumito Crime Batsu, and Punishment.
Crime and Punishment by
Shina Ringo. Please play.
All right. So,
pleased to be playing my songu.
So this has been the Wayward Podcast. I'm Toshi.
I'm Sarah.
I'm Kat.
Tony.
And we'll see you next time. Tabako no akiba ko sutere.